This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. And good morning to all of you who are joining us, Sangha, and particularly to the family members, parents and family members of Kian. It's really nice to have you joining us this morning. So this morning we're performing a novice ordination for Kian, Jeffrey Martin. And this is a part of the journey for those who are in a monastic discernment. Buddhism has, since its beginning with the Buddha, been always had predominant, until more recent times, monastic tradition. It has been largely, in many ways, a monastic path, while at the same time, lay practitioners have been present since the very beginning. But the role of monasteries and monastics in terms of practicing and cultivating the Dharma within individual lives and within communities, and then serving the larger communities, has been a really central role within Buddha Dharma. In coming to the West, as times are getting more and more secularized, that is also happening to Buddhism. And so there are, within the United States and in the West, very few monasteries in which people are dedicating their lives to practicing the Dharma, living within a monastic community, living with monastic vows. And so we are one of those places. And as my teacher felt, I feel that it is extremely important in not only our own community, but in the life of Buddhism today and going into the future. They're both monastic and the lay sanghas, communities, both have distinct and very important qualities, attributes, roles, and that both are needed, both are mutually dependent on each other. That's really the way it's always been. And so in our own way, we are maintaining and continuing that, as well as, very importantly, providing an opportunity for those who are drawn to this life, those few who are drawn to this life, to be able to find it and to have such a life. And so this morning, with Kian's novice ordination, is a part of that journey. So for a student who is drawn to the monastic life, for us in our Sangha, they would enter into residential training. They would at some point become a formal student, a training student. At some point they would receive Chikai, the Buddhist precepts, the Bodhisattva precepts. And then through a process of inner examination and working together with the monastic council, they would ask at a certain point for themselves to become a postulant, which Kian has been now for several years, which is still a lay person, but now changing into a black robe and beginning to relate to themselves and the community and the monastics as a monastic, but no vows. And so this morning with the novitiate, the novice ordination, there is the stepping further into that, so that Kian will exchange his lay robe for a monastic robe, and will take vows to develop the monastic vows, not to take them fully yet, but to spend this next period of time developing them, all in service to seeing, to clarifying, and gaining confidence as to whether this is indeed the life that he wants to commit to for the duration of his life. And it's also a time for the Sangha to sort of be part of that discernment as well. And so this morning he will take those vows provisionally, but will not shave his head or take the okesa, the robe that the traditional robe that is taken at full ordination. Okay. And as is true with all ceremonies, it's very important that the Sangha be here this morning to witness this. That's part of the passage. It's part of also how the Sangha creates itself together. And in this way, we have an opportunity for the monastic community to support Kian and his novice ordination, for the lay community to do the same, in the same way that the monastic and lay community support a lay student when they enter into formal training, when they take the precepts, when they become a chief disciple, and so on. So Kian will first do a series of bows, first to the Buddha, acknowledging that his entering into monastic, this part of his monastic training began with the Buddha, and in that way is very connected to, intimately connected to, and indebted to. And then he will do a series of vows to his parents, who are among the many of you who are watching, but so to appreciate that these vows are being offered directly to his parents. And this is in recognition of and gratitude to his parents for giving him life. If you're having trouble turning it, Kian, why don't you just come to where the camera is? Eduardo, could you yield your seat for a moment? So these vows are really important because they're expressing our mutual dependence, how we arise together, how we are so deeply, profoundly dependent upon each other for all of these different aspects of our lives. And in our practice, there are many ways every day that that's acknowledged. It helps us to sort of counter the notion that we exist as individuals or that we have arrived at any point on our own. So Kian has been, you have been practicing with the Sangha for many years. And you came, I was thinking that the value of monastics ordaining earlier is they have more hair on their head to take off. And your life unfolded in many directions. You came, you studied engineering, you spent many years teaching in New York and were active at the city there. You were spending some years in residency here, training, then leaving and going back to teaching in lay life, then returning for residency here and in the Southwest, and then you moved to Europe, where you spent several years there with your partner and was with her through her terminal illness and her passing. And throughout so many of those years, you spoke to me of your deep desire to make this your life. And there were things in your life that needed to be followed, pursued, completed. And when those had been completed, you returned again. And so this has been a long path for you in which you, for many years, had this deep sense that this was the life that you were called to, wanted to live. And so here you are now, taking these provisional vows. So we'll begin with invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. These are the body and mind of the student, of the Buddha. They are, in one sense, our complete community, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, when we understand them, because they include everything, The Buddha is the historical Buddha. It's all enlightened beings. It's your nature. It's the nature of all beings and all things. Dharma are the teachings of the Buddha and all enlightened beings, because all things possess the essence of what the teachings are pointing to. All things are dharmas. And the Sangha, the monastic Sangha, your monastic family, the Sangha of our order, all Buddhists across the world and all beings, because everyone possesses Buddha nature. And so in that way, invoking the three treasures is to invoke all beings in the universe, animate and inanimate, into this room to witness and to be part of this ordination. Whatever, and please, Gosho. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodaishi. Be one with Taiso Josai Daishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodaishi. Be one with Taiso Josai Daishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodaishi. Be one with Taiso Josai Daishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. So in the tradition of Buddhist monasticism, the monastics shave their head as an expression of letting go of all attachments, of freeing oneself, of that, of the ways in which we identify the self with the body, with our appearance, with the way we present to the world. So it's both the way we look out and see the world, and it's also the way the world looks in and sees ourselves, and how in that we can become very confused and entangled. And so while there is nothing apart from this Buddha body, hair included, we shave the head as an expression of, as a physicalized way of manifesting our non-attachments. And because hair grows, it continues like weeds, like attachments, continue to proliferate until we see into their fundamental nature. The hair sort of manifests as a sort of expression of that proliferation of our attachments. And so we continue to shave the head. So as a novice in this novice ordination, as an expression of your intention to resolve as to whether this is your life, I would like to remove a lock of your hair. Do I have permission to do so?
Yes.
This hair is preserved until full ordination, kept on my altar. And then with full ordination, it's buried. Return to the elements. So next we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. And this is familiar to many of you. The Gatha of Atonement is a way that we begin again. We begin fresh by acknowledging all the karma through our thoughts, words, and actions, that we have created any harm, consciously or unconsciously, intentionally or unintentionally, things that may sit heavily in our mind, things that we may have forgotten about. In this gatha, which is all-encompassing, we bring in all of our past actions and face them simply and honestly so that we can take responsibility for any harm we've created through the atonement, through our atonement, and then move forward. Now we can take that energy rather than being bundled up in our regret or remorse or our suppression. Now we can focus it, in this case, into your monastic life. All of what we're doing is to free you more and more and more so that all of the energy that can be dispersed in so many different directions can be channeled into one stream, the stream of the Dharma, the Buddha and the Sangha, your practice, your vow to alleviate suffering. It's all focused in that one stream. So all of this is to free you so that that can be done. So this we'll do in call and response. So I'll chant each line and then the Sangha is invited to respond, and those of you at home are certainly invited to join us as well. Gatha of Atonement. Everyone please gassho. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
Okay, do a bow. Do you have a handkerchief? You don't? Is it clean? Jishin, can you get a handkerchief from the back? Some Kleenex. Next we'll do Shasui, which is a ritual that recognizes the Buddha mind, your Buddha mind. I see that I actually gave you a little cut, so you're offering a little blood for a little more than was asked for, but we'll put it to good use. Next, we'll do the taking refuge of the three treasures. So having invoked the three treasures, now taking refuge, which is to an expression of giving yourself wholeheartedly, unreservedly, as Master Dogen said, to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, which is, as I said, for all practitioners, certainly for monastics, where you find yourself, where you find your practice, where you find the universe that you're practicing to liberate. So I'll do this three times. The second time through, we'll do it as call and response, okay? So everybody please gassho. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha, I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha. I have taken refuge in the Dharma. I have taken refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha,
the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha. I have taken refuge in the Dharma. I have taken refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha. I have taken refuge in the Dharma. I have taken refuge in the Sangha. So now, quite a number of years ago, you took the Bodhisattva precepts. So this morning you will take them again, anew, now within the context, the mind of your discernment, monastic discernment, and your novitiate ordination and vows. Okay. So the first of the pure precepts, having already taken refuge, now we have the three pure precepts. The first of the pure precepts is to not create evil. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Will you maintain this?
I vow to create good.
To cease from evil.
I vow to not create evil.
Just one bow at the end of the three. The second pure precept is to practice good. This is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi. This is the way of all beings. This is a way of being in the world. The second pure precept is to practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And the third of the pure precepts is to actualize good for others. This is to transcend the profane and the holy. It is to liberate oneself and others as oneself, as the whole world. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
We'll be doing a Jikaya Bodhisattva precept ceremony next month for a couple of students, and so I'll speak more about the precepts themselves then. I want to leave time so we can focus on the monastic vows this morning. The 10 great precepts help us to understand how to practice the pure precepts. They point to the ways in which we create the most binding karma as human beings within ourselves and between ourselves and each other. This is the path of the Bodhisattva. The first of the great precepts is to affirm life, do not kill. Life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life and not kill.
The next great precept is to be giving, to not steal. The mind and externals are just thus, the gate of liberation is open. To be giving, to be generous in every thought, word, and action. To be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving, do not steal.
The third great precept is to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality, to use this Buddha body in all ways, particularly regarding sexual energies, sexual desires, in a way that honors the body and mind of self and other. The three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean from the beginning. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body. Do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I vow to honor the body and not misuse sexuality.
Manifest truth. Do not lie. This is considered one of the most important precepts in all of Buddhism, because the very path of Buddhism is, and Buddha Dharma, is to be true, to live in a way that is true. Realizing Buddha nature is to realize what is fundamentally true, not because it is made true, but because its very nature is true. That means in accord with the nature of things. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there's neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth, do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth and to not lie.
Next precept is to proceed clearly, to not cloud the mind. When a cloudy mind is all we know, then various ways of clouding the mind attract us. When we encounter the pure, bright, undefiled Buddha mind, then those ways of clouding the mind are no longer attracting, tempting, enchanting. The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to proceed clearly and not cloud the mind.
All of these precepts are about being, are about relating to your mind, to your body, to your thoughts, to your emotions, and to the mind, the bodies, the thoughts and emotions and actions of others. Here, see the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we're the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection and not speak of others' errors and faults.
To realize self and other as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. These are the way in which we use our thoughts and our language to create a sense of separation of high and low, of inferior and superior. It's a source of all suffering we create. Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the entire earth. When the great body is manifested, there's neither outside nor inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not even a single square inch of earth upon which to stand. That's your nature. Realize self and others as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and other as one. I vow to not elevate the self and blame others.
Each of these precepts at the same time brings us more into harmony with ourselves and others, and it also tunes the mind. They tune the mind. The next precept is to give generously, to not be withholding, to realize that we always have something to offer. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Give generously, do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously and not be withholding.
The next great precept is to actualize harmony. Do not be angry. So greed, anger, and delusion, these last three precepts. It is not regressing. It is not advancing. It is not real. It is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There is an ornamented cloud ocean. Both are essential. Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony and not to be angry.
Those beautiful words of Dogen, he points to the importance of recognizing, of realizing the fundamental nature is empty, and that there is something before us. The 10th great precept is to experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. The three treasures are your body and mind, the body and mind of the Buddha, the body and mind of the universe. To defile them is to step outside, to put yourself apart, and to try and injure. It's like injuring one's own body. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things and to not defile the three treasures.
So now we move to the monastic vows. When Dada Roshi began forming this monastery and creating a monastic community, he felt the need to and the desire to have monastic vows, vows that were specific to the monastic life, and that helped to point to or describe, shape what the monastic life is, what monastic practice is, what its foundations are. In other words, what is the monastic life? It's not just putting on robes or shaving the head, living in a monastery. And so we could say with each of these vows in the monastic life itself that there's an inner life, an inner aspect, and then there's an outer aspect. The outer aspect is, in a sense, the way we bring ourselves forward, the way we relate to others, the way we appear in the world. The inner aspect is the very deep, it's like the spring, the source from which everything else arises. In a sense, it is the more quiet, internal, private, if you will, aspect of the monastic life. It is that part which is we share together, but which is also unique because it is private. It is only within each one of us. And of course, we could say the same thing about bodhicitta and about the inner spiritual life of every practitioner. In that sense, it's not different. What makes it at the same time not the same is that it's taking place within this very particular way of living one's life, whose whole purpose and whole intention is to create the context, the environment, and to shape. And so we talk about monastic formation. Right? What does it mean to form into the life of a monastic, of a Buddha, of a practitioner devoted to the way? What does that mean? And so this period of formation is for you to continue to discern that as you are forming. That's how it happens. You don't do it from a distance. You do it from inside of that very process, that experience. And you don't do it alone. You do it with all of us. We all do it together. Because that's the only way you can know if this is the life to live. It has to be done by living that very life. And at a point where you are not yet taken final vows, so it's both completely in, all in, and there's an opening, right? So that as you go through this process, if you were to determine that this actually is not the way you want to live the rest of your life, then that's fine. That process of discernment has helped you to clarify that. That's really important, not just for you to know, but for the Sangha to know. That this is the whole point of this, is to be very dedicated and committed, and at the same time, to leave it open, which is a very sort of interesting tension, dynamic, right? But both keeping both of those sort of present are really important, because that's the basis from which you're experiencing, right? So all these years you have felt clear that this is your life. Well, now you're living it, right? So before it was something you saw up ahead. Now it's right under your feet. So this period is very important for you to examine and come to that confidence. The first of the monastic vows is, well, let me just say first that these are living vows. They're dynamic. And so each of the vows also has a kind of inner and outer aspect. They're just part of your everyday life, a simple life, every day, which you have been living for some time now. It is the place, and they are the vows by which you practice, you awaken, you liberate yourself, you realize your true nature, you manifest compassion. It is the field, the Buddha field, in which you die 100,000 deaths a day and come to life 100,000 times a day. It is a demanding life. Ceaselessly turning inward, ceaselessly taking responsibility, beholding the mind, examining, right? Practicing the precepts, letting go of attachments, clarifying the great matter. It is a demanding life, but it is also a joyful life for those for whom this is their life. So the first of the vows is to live simply, the vow of simplicity, which means to live without adornment, without clutter, without distraction. In a sense, to strive to live as close as you can to the bare essentials, to the natural elements, earth, air, fire and water, space, mind, with no hindrance in the mind. There is no fear. It is to freely and joyfully relinquish accumulating wealth, having excessive possessions, owning property, so that all of the energy that goes into providing those things, maintaining those things, often increasing those things, can be freed to channel every day and every moment into your own path, and a path that you're giving to others. So the vow of simplicity is to cultivate a mind and life that's free of all of those necessary responsibilities and obligations that come with a home dweller's life. So it also means that as a monastic, you would not receive or accumulate any wealth. You have the option when you receive it to give it away, but not to take possession of it. And that puts you into a very intentional relationship with the Sangha, where you are dependent. So as the lay Sangha is dependent upon the monastics to provide the community, the Sangha, the teachings, the monastics in turn are dependent upon the lay community to provide the ability for us to be here. And so we depend on each other. It's a beautiful, exquisite unity. This vow of simplicity is to allow you to realize your fulfillment in all of your activities, which are wondrous in their simplicity, to conduct yourself humbly and without contrivance, so to be of a simple body and mind and thought. And in this way, the monastic path is a sort of ongoing guardianship of that deepest mystic path of silence and stillness and inquiry and simplicity, and finding your joy and satisfaction there. The monastic lives a life of simplicity. Will you vow to develop a life of simplicity?
I vow to develop a life of simplicity.
Like all vows, these vows are both an aspiration. They're what we are moving towards, realizing more and more. They're the ground upon which we stand. And when we wander from them, they're what we return to. The next monastic vow is the vow of stability. When we chant for our head-shaving liturgy, we chant in the drifting, wandering world. It is very difficult to cut off our human ties, our worldly ties. So the vow of stability is just this. It's the vow of constancy. In the early centuries ago, meaning of this word, stability meant a clear resolve, a mental equilibrium, a state of being difficult to overthrow, the power of remaining upright. Kind of wonderful ways to reflect on this vow of stability. This vow is taken within the ongoing fluctuations, the coming and going, the rising and falling, the births and deaths, within and without. To live more and more within the ground of being, the mind that is not swayed and so easily disturbed by every passing wave, the mind that knows its own ground. Outwardly, this vow points to having clarified the primary decisions in your life, your work, not having children, or having raised children if you had had children, relationships, intimate relationships, travel. This vow is to really determine that the stability is inner, but also it's an outer stability. This is where we make our lives and make this our universe and realize this as large as the universe. So for the monastic, your work is within the Dharma, serving the community. Children are not to be propagated, because otherwise you would leave and take care of your children if you were to have children. With relationships, it's to either be a solitary practitioner, say you are at this point, or to be in a stable partnership, but again, not to have children. And so again, to help us, to free us as much as possible so that we have that stability of body, mind, emotion, thought, intention, so that we can be clear and direct in the direction of our own path. So when your resolve or equilibrium wavers, or is hard to find, this is your vow. It calls you back to find your ground, to examine what needs to be seen, to use those very challenges to cultivate greater stability. Right? The stability is very alive, it's very flexible, right? But it is stable. To within a vast and boundless unknowing, to be committed and unambiguous about your life. The monastic lives a life of stability. Will you vow to develop a life of stability?
I vow to develop a life of stability.
Next is a vow of service. It's known far and wide by those who examine that the deepest happiness comes from giving generously. That when we give to others, our lives become larger. So this vow is to make your life a life of giving, of service, of being a benefit, which means to cease from doing harm, because they can't go together. It's so easy to be drawn into selfishness, right? That's so easy. And to think largely of life in terms of what is good for just you and yours. This vow is to free you of that, because your very nature is giving. All beings' natures is to give. And so this vow is to encourage you to let your life be one complete offering to every creature, to every person, in every situation, at all places. In that sense, the monastic life is ongoing, right? You're never not a monastic. You take on your robe, you put off your robe. There is no on and off for this life. It's just this life. And this service is service to your teacher and to your teachers, to the teachers within the order, to the Sangha, to the seniors, those who you practice with, who are helping you to develop yourself, to all those who come seeking the Dharma, to everyone you come into contact with, those you find easy and those you find difficult. This is the vow of great compassion, to be sincere in the bodhisattva path to alleviate suffering, which means you have to work with and transcend, free yourself of anything that would withhold your compassion from others. To live in service is simply that. It's simply that. To bow and to give, to be generous without expectation or thought of reward. Giving is just giving. The monastic lives a life of service. Will you vow to develop a life of service?
I vow to develop a life of service.
Next is the vow of selflessness. And this is the very lifeblood of this Dharma. It's the lifeblood of life itself. It's the heart of being. It is prajna, wisdom. It is karuna, compassion. It is upaya, skillful means. To realize and actualize that you are not this, this is not you, this is not yours, in every moment, too deeply again and again and again, realize that this body, this life, this mind does not belong to you, but it is yours to take responsibility for and to use well. Because you have no abiding place, you can awaken the mind of Buddha. You can bring forth the heart of compassion. You can manifest as masculine, as feminine, as neither masculine nor feminine. That is the freedom of Kano Bodhisattva. Whenever suffering appears, a sense of self is present, always. When we teeter within hesitation or blaming or doubt or stinginess, the sense of self is present. Selflessness is a direct experience. It's everyday practice. It's your nature. And so this vow is to really, in earnest, live your life every day in every thought, word, and action within selflessness, examining, practicing, realizing, and to plumb its depths. The monastic lives a life of selflessness. Will you vow to develop a life of selflessness?
I vow to develop a life of selflessness.
We should realize that even to speak of it that way, to speak of selflessness, already creates a sense of something. That's why we have to devote our lives to realizing that it is not something. The last of the monastic vows is to vow to live the Buddha's way. These monastic vows are all-inclusive. They include each other. To live the Buddha's way is simplicity, stability, selflessness, and service in your body and mind within this Sangha every day. The Buddha said this is a long path to live to the best of your ability in the spirit and manner of the Buddha, not just as an idealized notion, but following the example of the Buddha, who was, I think, one of the most sublime and profound examples of a student. What does it mean to be a student of the way? The Buddha gives us an amazing, incredible example of what it means to be a student of the Dharma, to be a seeker, to follow the example of the Buddha as a seeker, of an enlightened master, of a human being, and to find aspiration in all of the Buddhas and ancestors, in everyone around you who has Buddha nature. Courage, perseverance, earnestness, kindness, generosity, fierceness, humor. Of course, we live in a very different time than the Buddha, and we are practicing the Mahayana path. So this vow of the monastic is to have great respect and reverence for the wisdom traditions of Buddha Dharma, and to uphold and maintain them, and to move in accord with our time and seasons. This is a living tradition, which particularly as monastics, we are charged with maintaining. Tradition is a vessel, it is a vehicle, it is the thing we see and hear and respond to and have affinity with. It is a living thing, and that is important so that it not becomes static or dead or institutionalized. And that is one of the dangers of the monastic life. Is it become a life of complacency or being static, stagnant? In other words, to live and die every day, to take your vows every day, to choose this life every day is a good way of staying healthy and keep your juices flowing. To follow the way of our ancestors, but not just to do today what was done yesterday without reflection. And so first and foremost, within the everyday practice of the monastic, is to vow to live the Buddha's way. And so that means looking backwards and forwards at the same time. The monastic lives in accord with the Buddha's way. Will you vow to develop your life as the Buddha's way?
I vow to develop my life as the Buddha's way.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts were handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha generation after generation to me. These monastic vows have been given to me by my teacher, Dada Roshi, and now I give them to you to practice and develop during this year or period of time for monastic training, for the training as a novitiate. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Now, everyone please gassho. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddhas. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. Okay. Now, Kian will exchange his postulant's robe for his monastic robe. So in our time, in various aspects of our training, our liturgy and our monastic life, we bring with it elements that have traveled down through the ages from India, China, Japan, all of the places. Can you move over a little bit so I can see the camera? All of the places, countries in which Buddhism has existed, and in particular that our lineage has come to us through or from. And so the kromo is and the kimono, the dress that we wear, is brought down to us through our Japanese lineage. The okesa, which comes with full ordination, harkens back to the time of the Buddha, the single robe worn over one shoulder. And part of the formation is obviously the student, Kien's, relating to himself. I remember when I was had my novitiate and would see myself in a robe, in a monk's robe, when I was fully ordained and saw myself with a shaved head. Sometimes it was felt like returning home, and sometimes it felt like, who is that? And how did you get here? It's so interesting how that deep discernment, even within our confidence and our clarity and our commitment, that questions can still arise, doubts can still arise. And so in that way, the formation of the monastic continues, I think, probably all the way into and through our death. I don't think it's ever completed. Pull it, let Yukon help you, and pull it up so it's on your waist in front. As with all things, what begins with difficulty gets easier and easier. Can you help him with that? Yeah. It's also hard to do it standing here in front of all of you. So this is the raksu that you were given many years ago by Dada Roshi, with the name Kien, which means radiant circle. So here, returning to you once again, just put it over there. With full ordination, the student sows a new raksu because they receive an ordination name. This is the lineage of the ancestors. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Jeffrey Kian Martin, having fulfilled the novitiate training requirements of Zen Mountain Monastery and the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 18th day of April 2021 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the novitiate vows, lineage chart, the raksu, and the monastic robe. And now the jisha will lead Kian around to do Jihai. And this gives all of the everyone in the Sangha an opportunity to congratulate and acknowledge Kian's novice ordination. Those of you at home feel be encouraged to gassho and bow as Kian passes you. Because we have such a large lay Sangha, I don't have many opportunities to talk too much about the monastic life. And so today and later, when we do a full ordination for Taikyo and Hokyu, that'll also give me an opportunity to say more about this. This is something we speak about a lot within the monastic family here, often regularly, but this is a nice way to speak about it in a larger way. The monastic is one who leaves everything in order to seek the way. Thomas Merton, replacing way with God. And they're driven by a certain ineffable imperative to discover in this lifetime the ground of being, to resolve this great matter, to enjoy it in your life, and to offer that enjoyment to others. This is the great freedom of Prajnaparamita. It's the boundless wisdom and compassion of all dharmas are forms of emptiness, of light within darkness and darkness within light. All of these ways of speaking about the fact that the fundamental truth is present in every moment, in every place. The monastic recognizes that while this life is a demanding life, it's a rigorous life, that these rigors are slight in comparison to the burden of our inner estrangement from our true nature. And the monastic feels this most keenly. The monastic understands that with each passing year, our dedication to this life and to the well-being of others is, more and more we come to understand, the path to happiness and fulfillment. It transforms from a teaching, from a vow, from an intention, to your own lived experience. For the monastic, as Evelyn Underhill says, this quest constitutes the whole meaning of one's life. And so if you trust deeply in this Dharma and practice wholeheartedly, and vigorously examine and live these vows, and follow your heart, your discernment of this life will naturally unfold and clarify. You can trust that. And that is an incredibly powerful thing to do in one's life, to be given the opportunity and to be helped, right? Not only your own question and examining, but the questions and examinations of the monastic council, your monastic siblings, of other Sangha members who may have asked you. I remember for me, those who challenged me in making this life, who thought I was running away from my life, that I was trying to avoid things, helped me by challenging me to really question within myself, is that what I was doing? To really be clear. And so it's a really incredible, wonderful opportunity to be so, in a sense, explicitly presented with this path of discernment. And so please use this time well, and may your life go well.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.